राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी गोपी जन वल्लभा गिरिवर धारी गोपी जन वल्लभा गिरिवर धारी यशोदा नंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यशोदा नंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यमुना तीर बन चारी यमुना तीर बन चारी
Jai Prabhupada, 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 Jai Prabhup जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्रजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तर शतशी श्रीमती श्रीवाइंग्रीशल अरविंद भक्तिदान्त स्वामी जगद्गुरु श्री प्रभुपाद की जय। इस्कॉन बेबी फाउंडर आचार्य जगद्गुरु श्री प्रभुपाद की जय। रामाचार्य श्री हरिदास ठाकुर की जय। प्रेम कहस कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्यामाशाली गौर भक्तवृंद की जय। श्री श्री राधा कृष्ण गोप गोपीनाथ श्याम कुंड राधा कुंड गिरी गोवर्धन की जय। ब्रज में वृंदावन धाम की जय। नवदीप पार्वती धाम की जय। जगन्नाथपुरी धाम की जय। गंगा माई की जय। जमुना माई की जय। भक्ति देव की जय। तुलसी महारानी की जय। समावेत भक्त वृंद की जय। गौर प्रेमानंदे ऑल ग्लोरियस टू सिंबल ग्लोरी ऑल ग्लोरियस टू सिंबल ग्लोरी ऑल ग्लोरियस टू सिंबल ग्लोरी टू श्री श्री गुरु एंड श्री गुरु आई एम रीडिंग फ्रॉम अ बुक about A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada on Islam. This book has recently come out, but seeing the situations, a particular place, our devotees should be well acquainted that what actually our standpoint of view, our stand in the viewpoint of Islam according to the eyes of Srila Prabhupada. Most of us are uninformed, whatever the religious fervor we might have, but somehow or another it is in contradiction to the other tradition, unable to appreciate what exactly the scriptural injunctions are, what we simply depend upon hearsay, and we never try to care for looking into little sincerely, not minutely even, but little sincerely, what is the bottom line, you know? But now, one devotee, Jayapataka Swami's disciple, his name is Ravan Aridas. Ravanari means
one
who is the enemy of Ravan, means Ramchandra. But he's coming from Muslim background. His Karmi name is Akif Manaf Jabir. He's a doctorate, PhD, and he wants to serve the movement by putting up a very Krishna conscious treatise, very constrained to Srila Prabhupada's viewpoint. So he wants to elaborate in terms of a comparative study what Srila Prabhupada said about Islam with the authenticity of the Islam through the eyes of Islamic scholars. And what does actually Quran has to substantiate and prove the point. So if we try to see what is Srila Prabhupada's viewpoint and then try to examine, because here is the ready-made pudding. You know, we don't have to look into their scriptural way or their life, but we can make a judgment and a good friendship, because underlying fact that what we have undertaken in our devotional career as Krishna consciousness is the only solution. How Krishna consciousness way of life that we have adopted can be really justified to spread harmony and interfaith understanding between the communities? How can we reciprocate? And how can we really win their trust? We don't have to depend upon their trust, because the history said that somehow or another interpolation in the religion for personal interest, personal profit, make fanaticism. So they are more vulnerable. But a devotee, out of compassion, you know, he tries to overlook those discrepancies within other traditions. Those who are sincere seekers within those other traditions, they acknowledge the fact, but they are very few in number. Just like we devotees are very few in number amongst our own, you know, traditions. But does it mean that we cannot have access to interact with our surrounding community? Can't we exist and serve Srila Prabhupada's mission peacefully? Yesterday you were saying that they are very friendly to us. Even the ladies were, you know, greeting. We should understand, as far as we being Indians are concerned, that they were also of the same heritage as we were. But somehow or other, the time influence of the fanatics who were overzealous to spread the religion but did not discriminate that they can only spread the religion with violence. So under the threat of imminent death, people had to succumb to the religious demands of other denominations. Mostly Muslims or even Christians to that extent, in different disguises of tricks, they succumb to conversions. People succumb to conversions. It's not out of philosophical inquest, desire, that people go and surrender to Islam. The history is saying that. And at the same time, Christianity spread to the poorest region where the promise of opulence was supposed to be the medium to attract these guys and convert them into Islam. It's not the philosophical conviction that people are accepting the other religion. Nobody can beat the detailed philosophical quenching attitude of the Vedas. Nobody can challenge that. So that was also one of the drawbacks, that the Hinduism did not care, because they were very much proud of their heritage, that our poor sections, which were neglected by casteism, became oppressed within the community, and they were easily gullible for such conversions. So those who are coming from poor background, now they are getting opportunity to become opulent in their physical status. Naturally, they will justify, oh, we love Islam, we know Christianity. But underlying the core, that they are also coming from the same roots. After all, humanity is considered to be coming from one root, which is bifurcation and profusion was there. So they became segregation. But a spiritualist, Vidya Vinaya Sampanna Brahmane Gavi Hastini Shunichaiva Swapakecha Pandita Samadarshina, a learned person who is a civilized person, he actually values by seeing through equal vision, vision of equanimity, that if he can see a Brahman, a cow, an elephant, a dog, and a dog eater, is Muslim Yavan less than a dog eater? Is a Malecha, the Western non-believer in Vedic tradition, is called Malecha. Meat eater is called a Malecha, you know. And Yavan is also a degraded lower being, in that sense that they do not follow the tenets of Vedic civilization. That's why Mahabharata said that they were casted out. The history of Mahabharata reveals that after Parikshit Maharaj, his son Janmejaya took the kingdom. Okay, he was also a very pious king, and he was simply trying to preserve the glory of his father, who was a pure devotee. When Takshak bit and killed Parikshit Maharaj, Janmejaya was furious, and he started, you know, killing all the serpents out. You know, and he was prevented. Oh, do not get rid of this, you know, because they are also living entity. We must understand the spirituality behind it, you know, rather than simply taking a physical revenge. You know, it's not that good. Even Lord, who came in the form of Parshuram, was very, very angry with the Kshatriyas, you know, the warrior class, who were simply puffed up, and he started chopping off, and he removed them, kicked them out from the land of India, Bharatvarsha, the greater India, 21 times. That the whole earth was without the Kshatriyas. It is said in Srimad Bhagavatam. But he was also requested, please, do not be so much angry. You know, the story says, you know, simply under the pretense of obtaining Kamadeva, Jamadagni was the father, a great rishi, his wife Renuka. They have a beautiful household ashram. They were austere, and they were so powerful that they got a Kamadhenu, a wish-fulfilling cow. And one king of that country, he came along by. He was thirsty, he was, you know, out of his path, and he was lost. So somehow or other he took shelter in the ashram of Jamadagni. And Jamadagni fed sumptuously so much prasadam through the Kamadhenu to this king and his entire entourage of thousands of people. So he was so much astonished, but it started giving little envy. He wanted to steal the cow. He stole the cow. And when the rishi found out, he says, oh my God. So when his son Parshuram found out, you know, he got the cow back and chastised all them and kicked them out. But again, they came. During this time, the king wanted to defile Mother Renuka. So they kidnapped the mother and defiled her. So when Jamadagni came to know, he was so furious that look at the material life can give even an austere sadhu like me so much trouble. He was completely frustrated, and he ordered his son, elder son, to kill mother. He denied. Oh, what is overcoming? Even now the sons are disobedient to their father. You know? So, ultimately he told his younger son, Parshuram, to kill everybody. So Parshuram chopped out mother's head and brother's head, you know. And Parshuram wanted to take revenge of whatever happened, you know, to the king. So he said, the kings are real culprits. They are supposed to protect the people. Instead, they are doing all the nefarious activity. They are not worthy enough. And because he is an empowered personality, empowered incarnation of Krishna, he started through his axe, you know, he chopped out. Wherever he would go, he will chop out, and he reigned the terror. Every kshatriya, the administrative class, fled in fear. Some escaped, and they came to inhabited the northern region of Mesopotamia, and there where the Greek and Roman Empire sprouted out from their descendants. So actually Indo-European stock is Aryan stock, but they were not qualified followers of Vedic rites. So still today the history is corroborating something that the Iranian and even the Romans, they themselves call Aryans. The Germans, they call themselves Aryan. They want to use the swastik for the same reason, because the ancestry goes like this. So Prabhupada said, you Americans and European boys and girls, you are also Aryans. Huh? But you were not following the Vedic tradition. But somehow or another time has changed. Now you have accepted. Thank you very much for helping. So the physical nature of conversion, a Krishna conscious devotee overlooks. So Hinduism was overlooking. We did not believe in converting anybody. Neither Prabhupada asserts that we are a missionary activity, activist converting, you know, people into Hinduism. No. It's a philosophical persuasion. It is everybody's right. Other people were persuading poor, gullible people of India to accept their religion is by external influence, not philosophical persuasion. Just like a poor person can be given all the household amenities by a church, can easily be. Even some religious conversion or religious persuasion can be coming in disguises. What they did and what they are still doing in South India, that a Christian priest will wear our sannyasi clothes, you know, shave up and make a murti of Jesus Christ sitting in lotus with Abhay Mudra. Say, and accept, he has feature of Jesus. Oh, who the hell cares? You know, poor people do not understand. And they are called into worship with our arti paraphernalia to Jesus Christ. So they made Catholic ashrams and little temples, and they are still doing it. So some Hindus became enraged, and but you know, our Indian government, who the hell cares, you know, if we get money, if we get votes, and if we get little credit in eradicating poverty, you know. By a single shot, if you can kill three birds, that is beneficial. So Indian government encouraged this missionary, Christian missionary, for conversions. So they started putting up the pressure for animal killing and all these things. You know, I told you, I got an advertisement, you know. The Dubai itself has how many chairs? Can you bring my briefcase? You know, and where they are advertising Indian beef. You know, Indian beef. Indian beef means beef imported from India, and India has regular cow slaughtering going on. Cows from Vrindavan are going. You know, in Govardhan itself, you know, we have a big pound. One of my, one of the sadhus who was running that institute is from my hometown. When I was this young, you know, he helped my mother to carry me, you know, all the way to my home. And he was a student of my father, but he left the town in early 50s. And he became ecstatic. He roamed around. He was in Gandhi movement and this and but he settled down by the providence in Giriraj Maharaj, Govardhan, you know? So this Babaji took up vow to protect the cows. He would intercept the cows being transported for slaughterhouses in neighboring state. From Rajasthan, it would go to other. So he would send his men, he can get some donation and collect and rescue the cows. You know, he will invite the police and somehow or another. So he had about 600 cows in his pound. You know, he gave me 4 cows. He said, I don't want to give you from this because they are poor, you know, malnourished or whatever it is. Why don't you go to Govardhan Mela, which is holding on every Thursday, and you purchase? I'll donate to you. So he gave me 4 cows from the goods. But I saw there that on one side the cows are being sold. The Muslims are also there. And somehow or another they are cooking meat there. Right on Govardhan. So pollution, time, it is very pathetic situation. People are not God conscious because the pollution comes from outside. This advertisement declares, you know, that the atrocities this is a Dubai paper. Newspaper is published from, and this advertisement is pertaining to the smart. It's a M. Lal's department stores, grocery stores. Fresh mutton, Indian. Fresh beef, Indian. Now this guy has how many department chain stores? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. 11 chain stores they are all over. He is M. Lal, means he must be Hindu. But he is importing Indian beef. He has 11 chain. And if this is only one storeholder, how many stores would be in the entire Arab country? Can you imagine how many cows must be slaughtered and being transported? So, what actually, coming to the point of concern is, where the religion is standing, what we are trying to follow, is giving us some kind of soothing assurance that Srila Prabhupada is so kind. But we have to understand what exactly the anomaly in the religion is. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati. Are the commandments of love. It means we must respect equally and try to understand the desire of the Lord. And if we understand the desire of the Lord by in giving the commandments to the people of different nations in different times and circumstances, the desire would not change. The Lord's desire would be equal in all phases, in all circumstances. They may be told in different languages, but the meaning would not be different. So let's see what Srila Prabhupada says about the animal slaughter in Islam. I would like to read, because it's a quite elaborately discussed chapter by our good devotee, who is trying to help the devotees to understand, you know, understand the reality. How we can explain to our neighbors, who are, we are trying to be friendly in coexistence and carry out our activity and spread the good vibes, good flavor, you know, of friendship to others. In this chapter, Srila Prabhupada says, this is, the quotations are from the lectures, conversations, everything is available. Nothing is from made-up stories, because everything is quoted. This is an authentic way of presentation. Srila Prabhupada, just like in Islam also, they have got some principles for animal slaughtering. You know, those who have read the Quran, the Muslim religion allows animal slaughter once in a year. It is called Qurban. And they can slaughter animal near the mosque. Similarly, in Vedic religion also, animals are allowed to be slaughtered in some sacrifice, fire sacrifice. But no religion, either Islam or Hinduism, allows animal slaughter in the slaughterhouses. There are some particular rules and regulations. In another quotation, Srila Prabhupada said, in Buddhism, there is no animal killing. Although they are now killing animals, but originally the Buddhist religion meant non-violence. Christ also said, thou shalt not kill. And Krishna says, ahimsa, non-violence. So in no religion is the unnecessary killing of animals allowed. Even in Islam, they also have Qurban. Qurban means they can kill animals once in a year near the mosque. So everywhere animal killing is restricted. Tamal Krishna. Srila Prabhupada, one time you were explaining that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he was speaking with the Qazi, he convinced him that Quran does not actually advocate meat eating. Prabhupada said, yes, that's a fact. Because the Muslims, they also cannot eat meat unless it is sacrificed near the mosque. There is no recommendation that you purchase meat from the market or animals to be slaughtered in slaughterhouses. Srila Prabhupada. So Chand Qazi also replied that cow killing is also not generally recommended in the Quran. Actually, beef eating or flesh eating is not for the higher stage. But those who are inclined to take flesh, for them it is recommended that instead of killing many, many small animals, one big animal should be killed. So actually in Mecca, Medina, they kill camels. That is also done near the mosque. In Mecca and Medina there are no cows existing. Arabs do not have cows. Alright? Where the Quran is coming. So that is also done near the mosque. So the substance of his speech was that flesh eating is ultimately not recommended. This was Qazi's. Chand Qazi. Now, see, through the eyes of a Muslim scholar, how he describes Srila Prabhupada. Here Srila Prabhupada explains that in Islam there are some principles of animal slaughtering. The Muslim religion allows animal slaughter only as qurban or sacrifice. Such a sacrifice must be performed near the mosque, but Islam does not allow animal slaughter in the slaughterhouses. There are particular rules and regulations which must be followed by those who hanker for meat. In the Holy Quran, very clear instructions are given about what is intended as human food. Quotations. And we, Allah said, O Adam, dwell, you and your wife in the garden and eat freely of the fruits thereof where you will. Second, and give glad tidings, O Muhammad, unto those who believe and do good works, that theirs are the garden underneath which rivers flow, as often as they are regaled with food of the fruit thereof. Food of the fruit thereof. The third one, Allah is He who created the heavens and the earth and caused the water to descend from the sky, thereby producing fruits as food for you. There is no direct sanctioning anywhere, even in Christianity. Because Islam descends from Christianity. Islam is an offshoot religion of Christianity. From these three ayats of Holy Quran, it is obvious that when Allah created Adam and Eve, He gave them the fruits for food. And when the pious go to paradise, they will have fruits as their food. Then, when Allah created the earth, He produced fruits and the fruits as the food for mankind. Also, from the very life of Prophet of Islam, we can see that his daily food was bread, milk and palm dates. Hazrat Muhammad often mentioned that Islam means to treat every living entity as equal to oneself. One of the first statements Hazrat Muhammad made on regaining Makkah was, no one shall mistreat another, no one shall kill any animal. Not even cutting of a tree shall be allowed in Makkah. This is the foundation of Islam. For those who are really attached to eating meat, Allah allowed the sacrifice of animals such as sheep, goats and camels. Such less important animals could be sacrificed at proper place by proper person in a proper way. Then the body of the animal should be divided into seven parts, as six parts distributed to the poor people and remaining could be eaten for oneself. Only then it can be classed as halal or lawful meat. Otherwise, it is haram or unlawful. So, less important animals can be sacrificed and eaten in the authorized way. The result of following this procedure is that lusty desires of flesh eating will diminish and a person will then start eating only pure foodstuff like fruits, grains and vegetables, which are actually intended for human being by God. Allah allowed sacrificial meat, but not opening of slaughterhouses, where thousands of innocent animals are killed just to satisfy the tongue. It is very sinful and brings a degradation to the whole human society. For the general masses of people who are still unable to control their senses, the tongue, provisions for eating meat has been granted, but it is not recommended. To grant something and not recommend two are different things. So rules and regulations exist to slowly help one give up such bad habit. But for those who desire the highest perfection of life, love of God, meat eating is forbidden. So, for example, we can find the following ayats in the Holy Quran. 5:3 reads, forbidden to you for food are meat of the dead animals, blood and flesh of swine, and that on which has been invoked the name of another than Allah, and the dead through beating, that which has been killed by strangling or by a violent blow or by a headlong fall or by being gored to death, that which has been partly eaten by wild animals, unless ye are able to slaughter it in due form, that which is sacrificed on the stone altars, forbidden also is the division of the meat by raffling with arrows, that is impiety. So many restrictions are there. You have to sacrifice for, permission for Allah. Thus we can understand from this verse of the Holy Quran that not any kind of meat is permitted for eating, only the meat of an animal which has been explicitly killed for food with the takbir or the solemn mode of slaughter, zab, in the name of Allah, duly pronounced on it. This means that killing animals for food is a personal affair. It does not suggest opening slaughterhouses and killing hundreds and thousands of animals in an organized way every day. Those who want to eat meat should do it the proper way, which means killing only for one's own self. If you want to eat meat, you kill for yourself. Because everyone needs to take responsibility for his own actions. On the day of judgment, all dead creatures will come to life and will take revenge on those who had either teased them or killed them. This concession is given by Allah to those who cannot restrain the meat eating. By eating halal, lawful meat, they will gradually subdue the passion to give up meat eating. This will help to develop fine spiritual sentiments, namely love for Allah. Besides this, it is mentioned in the Surah Al-Ma'idah that within the limits of Mecca, most holy place, slaughtering of animals is prohibited. Animals of the chase are forbidden while you are in the sacred places or in the state of pilgrimage. This means that hunting of game is forbidden while you are hurumun, that is, while you are first in sacred precincts of Mecca, or second, in the special pilgrimage garb, ihram, when you go for Hajj. It is also explained that in Surah Al-Ma'idah that, O you who believe, kill not the game while in the sacred precincts in the state of pilgrimage. If any of you does intensely, the compensation is an offering brought to the Kaaba of a domestic animal equivalent to the one he killed. As adjudged by two just men amongst you, or by way of atonement, the feeding of the poor person or its equivalent in fast, that he may taste of the penalty of his deed. Allah forgives what has passed, but for repetition Allah will punish him, for Allah is exalted and Lord of retribution. This is in Quran 595. What it means that if someone kills an animal inadvertently within the limits of Makkah, one should then leave one of his pet animals there. In case one has no pet animal, one should give in charity food equivalent in value to the price of the killed animal. Otherwise, the offender must fast as many days as number of poor people who would have been fed under the second alternative. Thus, killing animals is a sin and therefore it is prohibited in a holy place like Makkah. If you see the Hajj, yatris, the pilgrims, they also take animals to give as donation. But we do not know where these animals are going. The animals will be taken away from the Mecca and again going into slaughterhouses. It's like charity given to God, again it is sacrificed for sense gratification. You follow my point? So, Quran doesn't suggest that. Second, in Surah Al-Safat of the Holy Quran, 37:99-109 verses, there is the following narration. He, Ibrahim, said, I will go to my Lord. He will surely guide me. O my Lord, grant me the righteous son. So we gave him the good news of forbearing son. Then, when his son was old enough to work with him, Ibrahim said, O my dear son, I have seen in a dream that I must sacrifice you. Now, see, what is your view? The son said, O my father, do as you are commanded. You will find me if Allah will one of his steadfast. So, when they both submitted to Allah, and he then laid him prostrate on his forehead for sacrifice against the stone, the father is trying to sacrifice his son, because Abraham was being tested by the Lord. This story also comes in Bible, Old Testament. We called out to him, O Ibrahim, you have already fulfilled the dream. Thus indeed we do reward those who do right. For this was a clear test. He was ready to sacrifice for the pleasure of the Lord. But then the Lord is preventing him. No, I was just testing you. But I must sacrifice. How could you take it back? Then the Lord allows it with a warning. You of that carnal desire, you want to eat the flesh. Even though I do not like the burnt remnants of the ram as a sacrifice, I just allow you because of your cravings. It is not the sanction of Quran. It is against the displeasure of the Lord that Abraham then sacrificed a lamb instead of his son to rejoice that he passed the test. So this was the thing. So here it is saying, so the Lord said, this was a clear test. Then we ransomed him with a tremendous victim, and we left for him amongst the generations to come in the later times peace and salutation to Ibrahim. Thus Ibrahim, that is Abraham, was born in Ur of the Chaldees, a place on the lower reaches of the Euphrates, not 100 miles from Persian Gulf, where the worship of the sun, moon and the stars was the prevailing from the form of religion. Ibrahim revolted against this quite early in life. They also had deities in their temples, which probably represented heavenly bodies and celestial winged creatures. He was still a youth when he broke the false deities. After this, he was marked down as a rebel and persecuted. He was thrown into the fire, but the fire became cool by the order of Allah and Ibrahim was saved. Then he left his ancestral land and, avoiding the Syrian desert, came to the fertile lands of Aram or Syria. This was the hijrat, the flight of Ibrahim. He left his people and his land because the truth was dearer to him than the ancestral falsehood of his people. He trusted himself to Allah And under Allah's guidance, he laid the foundations for the great people. Abraham thus revolted under traditional demigod worship, or in just for the sake of, you know, mercantile, transactions, not for the spiritual upliftment, this demigod worship Abraham revolted. Rather, he wanted to go under the commandment of the Lord. This is how he left his tribe, and that is called Hijrat of Ibrahim. This was in the fertile land of Syria and Palestine when a boy was born, the firstborn of son of Ibrahim named Ismail, and the name itself from the root Samia to hear, because Allah had heard Ibrahim's prayer. You know, this is in Quran 37th 100th verse. Ibrahim's age when Ismail was born from his maidservant Hajar was 86, and this is in Genesis 16:16. The boy's character was to be Halim, means forbearing. And these are the gunas, you know. This title is also applied to Ibrahim, that is in Quran. It refers to the patient way in which both father and son cheerfully offered to suffer any self-sacrifice in order to obey the command of Allah. So, the sacrifice has been in detail and very nicely, you know, explained. You know, that is not the will of the Lord. That is the sanction only under stricture, so gradually one can give up, you know. In the same way, the Vedas advocated the Ashwamedha sacrifice, Gomedha sacrifice, even a horse and a cow may be sacrificed to test the reincarnation, that they are given a highest elevation in another form of life. And by the power of the sacrifice itself, it would give them the rebirth. It is to prove the transmigration of the natural evolution to the higher species. Natural evolution to the higher species. So, they were qualified priests, and the time was right. This fire sacrifice was the means of salvation during the time of Treta Yuga. Krite dhyayato Vishnu, Tretayam yajato makhai. Yajan means worship through, makha means fire sacrifice. In the Satya Yuga, the meditation was the means of salvation. In Treta Yuga, fire sacrifice was the means of salvation. Dwapare Parichayayam, the big elaborate temple worship was the means for salvation, was in Dwapara Yuga. But Kalau Tad Hari Kirtanat, chanting of Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, is the means for Kali Yuga. Means of salvation in the Harinama, 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 Eva Kevalam, Kalau Nastyeva, 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 Nastyeva Gati Ranyata. You know, other things, people are still inclined to do fire sacrifices. You know, there is a group in India, they have a big base in Haridwar and Mathura. They call Gayatri Parivar people. They claim that they are doing horse sacrifice, Aswamedha Yajna. But they simply take a placard of a cowed horse, you know, and they carry, and then they burn the placard. But these sacrifices are not the means of salvation. It is the chanting of the holy name of the Lord is the salvation. You know? So when we understand the time, place and circumstances under which, you know, the Lord wants to eradicate the discrepancy, you know, of the commandments that He has given that sustains the earth, that sustains the creation. He chooses His devotees who can, who become exemplified to carry out His commandments. He can choose from any tribe, any place, any language, and get the thing done. When you can see Abraham, an illiterate one, he was unable to read even, but God is commanding, read this. These are my commandments, read. All right, I'm writing in the language that you speak, read. So how it came in Arabic, that has been explained. So I would suggest, wherever I'll be preaching, I would like to introduce that you get acquainted with teachings of Srila Prabhupada about Islam, because here Islamic community is much more prominent, and because they are of Indian origin, you know, there are by nature there are some interactions of being from India, you know. So instead of really alienating, let's seek some common ground and common understanding. You know, it is not nice to preach them, but at the same time, it is not nice to be influenced by them either. This will be giving a good protection for our children, you know, because they do not know the barriers. So we have to at least get acquainted with all scriptural emanation, the spiritual insight of our predecessor Acharya and an expert devotee that Krishna sends, right? It will rather fulfill our obligation and arm us with the knowledge. You know, Prabhupada said, and knowledge is not Indian, knowledge is not American, knowledge is not Muslim even. Knowledge is knowledge. I can get it through any means, through any religion, through any tribe. Therefore, devotees who are equipped with the transcendental knowledge, they also remain in the transcendental realm. They are not product of this material world, but yet they are coming as a representative and they carry on the work of the Lord. So this is the true process of bringing harmony and prosperity to the world. It is the desire of Srila Prabhupada, you know. I have been reading, you know, the fanatic activity of the Serbian Muslims in Indradumna Swami's book. By the way, do you have spare copy? I need those books because it gives wonderful explanation. See, the entire India is so much bereft with this kind of sacrificing or taking a courage to spread the glories of the holy name. Devotees have to encounter so many difficult situations. Our Indian people are stupid, virtually brainless. Most of the mass, they simply envy our movement, and put up so much hurdle. Rather, this kind of literature and experiences of the true accounts, can help eradicate their ignorance. And we try to, it's not a question of gaining sympathy for the movement, but it's rather educating and putting them on the reality platform. That, you rascal, you have lost your treasure. You are a miser. Don't be puffed up. Get shape up. Otherwise Krishna is waiting for you in the form of cow. All your prestige and profit and adoration are going to be washed out. So, Hare Krishna.